Hello, good evening, and welcome to our third Freedom, Ecstasy, and Awakening class in the second series on the Dhyanabhairava. This beautiful class, the mystical wisdom of the Lord who pervades everything, really does protect and liberate all of us. And like so many of you, I've been delighting in the depth of experience that you guys have been sharing. I was especially moved by the letters from those of you who are in the midst of some difficult, negative, uncomfortable physical and emotional experiences, and having the recognition that even those are divine. This is really one of the great fruits of practice, and one of the great fruits of really the grace that comes to us through the Vijnanabhairava in all the different ways that grace arises. One of the things that I've noticed about these texts, and I think others of you have said the same thing, is that there are several levels of support that come through them. One is, of course, the support of the lineages, the original lineage that this text comes from, the lineage of my teachers and of the teachers of those of you who are part of the class, because more and more what we begin to recognize is that not only is it what in the Kashmir Shaiva tradition and other traditions also, of course, we call grace or subtle help that lets us open up to these very subtle practices. It's also the grace that comes from sharing the experience that each one of you has here. So together, we really do create something quite extraordinary. And every time we deepen with one of these classes, I get a deeper and deeper experience of what it is that is really possible. So this week we'll be doing several types of practice, some of them as kind of speed meditations and some of them more slowly and deeply. We'll add another layer to the Sushumna Nadi practice. We'll work with a couple of the radically non-dual practices in the text. And I think that you will notice as we go on, and as many of you have over the course of these last few weeks, is that each practice bears fruit in a somewhat different way. And any one practice that you do for a while will affect you in several different ways. So, for example, when we meditate in the central channel or when we practice with the mantra Swaha, there will be these quite dramatic and subtle inner body experiences. So you might feel like you're rising or your vision might sort of enlarge and you might see things inwardly or simply experience a joyful mood or really feel your awareness being kind of drilled into yourself. And at the same time, these subtle body practices inevitably create what yoga calls purificatory experiences, which means that as the energy, and there's a lot of energy in this class and in these practices, as the energy comes into your body and into your being, it might activate some degree of physical illness that you might be carrying, and it might bring it out. And actually, what's very important to understand is that when something like this is happening, it's coming up to be expelled, because that's one of the qualities of this tradition, is that, and of this energy. And you also may find that, and I know this is happening to many of you, you become more psychically sensitive. And that means that people and sounds and events impact you more strongly than they ordinarily would. This is actually one of the effects of energy moving in the central channel. And I can say from my own experience over the years that whenever a deeper or stronger level of energy comes in, there's always a little period, sometimes just a few minutes, sometimes a few days, when it's almost as though the new influx of energy is, you know, kind of expanding our capacity for holding it. And, you know, it's as if a strong electrical charge comes through our wiring. So what I would say here is that you can actually trust the energy to strengthen your wiring, and that at the same time, if you're experiencing what feels like too much energy, one of the best ways to handle it is, simple as it may sound, to eat something, to have a piece of fruit or some protein, or in other words, engage your digestive energy. So that, and what will happen then as you do that is that the energy that might feel like more than you can handle psychically will be kind of, I don't want to say used up because it's not like that, but your digestive process will use some part of that energy and it won't feel quite so intense for you. And in fact, that recognition that the grounding practice for what might feel like too subtle a state or too sensitive a state is almost always to eat something. Not to eat a whole lot, but just to eat something. So another aspect of this practice, and one which I have found, again, unbelievably liberating and significant, is that as these practices, and especially the Sushumna Nadi practices, deepen in us, they begin to clear the knots, the psychic knots, the grunties, as they're called, granthi in the transliterated Sanskrit. Granthi literally means knot or block. And clearing these knots is one of the intrinsic benefits of the kind of subtle meditation practice, the subtle body meditation that we're doing. And it's very helpful, and this is one thing that we're going to be doing a lot of tonight, it's very helpful as these knots are being cleared to internalize the core non-dual tantric attitudes, such as wherever my mind goes is made of Shakti, is made of Shiva, is part of the all. And I'll explain part of why these understandings are so important and magical, even when they seem counterintuitive. For me, this particular meditation of looking at whatever mental and emotional, whatever thoughts, whatever emotions, whatever feelings come up in my mind and in my body during meditation, the practice of seeing them all as Shakti was one that my guru used to teach almost as a preliminary practice, as a way of dealing with the mind, which, you know, in tantric traditions, teachers will often start you off with a very high awareness. And my experience with this particular teaching, what he would say is, don't try to control your mind. In other words, don't try and make your mind shut up. Don't try and change the emotional content of your mind. Instead, understand that the force that's creating thoughts and emotions in the mind is the world-creating power of Shakti, of Bhairavi, who, as you remember, is the doorway to the non-dual state that is the experience of liberated consciousness. So he would say, if you just recognize whatever is happening in your mind as Shakti, as a manifestation of the goddess, then your mind will become peaceful on its own. And I have found over the years, and it was true almost from the beginning, that this form of honoring the movements of your own consciousness as aspects of the world-creating goddess of Shakti actually changes your whole relationship to thoughts, to emotions, to whatever obstructions show up, because the truth is they are made of Shakti. Every piece of our experience, including our physical bodies, is an expression of Shakti. And to recognize that is a way of honoring and making friends with the powers inside your body, the powers that are making your life happen. And this understanding is an extremely practical attitudinal strategy, if you will, for navigating the granular reality of our inner and outer lives, including dealing with our own difficulties without demonizing ourselves for having them. You know, one of the big pitfalls for spiritual people, and I include myself in this, is to have this sort of belief that we're supposed to be in a good mood all the time. If we're not in a good mood, we're not being spiritual. So to recognize that even when thoughts are driving me crazy, even when I'm uncomfortable, even when I'm mad, I'm still Shakti, I'm still Bhairava, I'm still made of consciousness. Somehow this brings about an attitude of very nitty-gritty acceptance that is, it's literally global. Your whole body-mind will relax with this understanding. So even though the Vijnana Bhairava is not a psychological text, quite the contrary, it's, you know, it comes from probably pre-8th century of the Common Era, and the practices in it are way older than that, so it's pre-modern. But the understanding behind it is profoundly psychologically transformative as well as spiritually awakening. And what I've found over the years is that these practices have cured many of my bedrock negative habits, tendencies, you know, the tendency to disapprove of myself, to disapprove of other people, to indulge in all sorts of casual judgments. So even though the text gives different types of practice for working directly with extreme emotional states, we did some of them in our first series, its real gift to us is the habit that we can get into through doing these practices of remembering to look for the non-dual, to look for the divine in different ways, finding these phrases, these ways of saying this one truth that are a little bit different than the last time so that we don't get routinized by it. And in a certain way, what the Vijnana Bhairava does for us is reminds us not to forget. There's a story in the Hasidic tradition about a sage named Nachman of Breslin, who told the story about a man who lived in a city in which the wells were poisoned, and everyone who drank the water went mad. And this man had a water supply; he had a pure water supply. But at a certain point, he realized that he was now the only sane person in the city. So, and he realized that it was just too lonely being in this sane state. And besides, he was about to run out of pure water. So he thought, what can I do to remind myself of the truth of who I am? And what he did was he devised a sign and he put it all around his house so that every time he saw the sign, he would remember, oh, I've forgotten who I am. And in fact, this became his way of reminding himself to stay in touch with reality, even when he was drinking this water that made him crazy. And of course, the water that makes us crazy is the cultural framework that we live in which we are constantly told by the culture and also by our own senses that the world is different from us and outside of us and dense and we're dense. So these practices really are a way of reminding us, even when we've forgotten, that actually it's all right, that pure consciousness is present everywhere. And we might translate this into contemporary language as actually there really isn't a problem about reality, even though there may be problematic situations. Another way of saying this is everything is workable because everything is made of the same consciousness. In other words, if everything is already divine, then once we understand how to see it that way, not only does it change our experience, but it has another effect, which is that it actually empowers us to deal much more skillfully with reality. So this is the non-dualism of the Tantra. It's not meant to be a way of excusing unethical actions, nor is it an encouragement to stay passive in the face of things that need fixing. Far from it. But what it does is change the way we feel as we go through our life, including as we fix what seems to be wrong, as we stand up for what's right, as we face things that we might not have the courage to face in our ordinary state, we are able to do it without fear, without distancing ourselves or separating ourselves from the reality around us, because we are committed to seeing everything as divine. So let's take a moment now to really find our posture. We're going to chant and offer our dedication and practice our first meditation. And you can begin to get ready for that by actually recollecting your energy, the energy that's gone here and there, the energy that you know, may be invested in what you have to do when you get off the call. And with the next inhalation, just feel yourself bringing all your scattered energies into your body, actually bringing them in with the breath, through the nostrils, with the feeling that your energies flow in through the nostrils as two streams of silvery blue energy, two streams of light energy that draw your attention right into the center of the head, into the midbrain. And you find that space in the midbrain that's between the ears, between the forehead and the back of the skull. And focusing first on the breath flowing in through the nostrils, notice that your attention can very naturally flow into the center of the head, into the midbrain, and that from there you can turn your inner gaze inward as though you're looking down from the center of the head, down this slender channel that runs right through the middle of your body towards the back, just in front of and actually inside the spinal column. This central channel, the Madhya Nadi, that is the core, the axis on which your entire being is upheld. And be aware of how this inner axis runs from the center of the head down through the very middle of the body, to the coccyx, to the perineum, actually, which is that little knob of flesh just in front of the coccyx between the anus and the sexual organ. And with that awareness of the breath flowing in and your inner gaze in a very relaxed way, focusing in and down, so that the breath now begins to flow in and down the central channel towards the coccyx, and then flow up through the central channel. And with this inner awareness, you can sway from one buttock to the other and bring yourself into a very grounded relationship, feeling the relationship between your buttocks and the seat, feeling the sitting bones, the sits bones becoming heavy. And as the breath flows upward from this grounded base, just sense the body lifting up through the crown, your chin slightly tilted downward in a slightly prayerful position. The crown of the head being lifted up towards the ceiling. And we'll begin by chanting the mantras, invoking Shiva as the pure consciousness, pure existingness, and pure blissfulness that is our inner being. And asking as we chant this inner consciousness to teach us to reveal what we truly are in the course of our practice. We ask that through the power of our practice, all beings may have happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings experience the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. We ask that all beings know the sacred joy and the equanimity that we experience when we enter the state beyond grasping, aversion, and dullness. And we ask to know the equality of all that lives. So you can refresh your posture if need be and let yourself experience the breath flowing in and down to the base within the Sushumna Nadi and flowing up and out through the base, through the Sushumna Nadi. We're actually going to practice now one of the core dharanas of the Vijnana Bhairava, which is dharana number 28. And it's the practice that is the basis of all kundalini the very center of all Kundalini-focused, Kundalini chakra-focused practices. It's the practice of being aware of Shakti Kundalini rising from the root center and opening the chakras along the way. So this is a practice that is known as a Laya Bhavana. It's a practice, we'll talk about what that means later. It's a practice of dissolving the grosser elements in our being in subtler. So allow yourself to be fully present at the very base of your posture, at the base of your spine. And be aware now of the area inside the perineum, known as the Muladhara Chakra. And one way to make yourself more fully aware of it is to perform what's sometimes called the Mulabandha or the anal lock. You actually pull in your anus and then let it go. Pull it in and let it go. And see if that brings your awareness more easily down to that part of your body. And imagine at the very base of the body that the Kundalini Shakti, the subtle evolutionary energy that is intrinsic to every human being, is glowing in the form of a coiled spring of light. It's a white golden color. And as the breath flows in, you feel the inhalation flowing down the Sushumna Nadi, and you imagine this coiled white gold light rising from its place at the root and rising up with the inhalation to the area in the center of the pelvis towards the back, which is known as the Swadhisthana Chakra. Just feel the energy rising to that place. It's really just parallel to the pelvic girdle in the center of the body towards the back. And inhale and exhale in that spot, in that place. Inhaling with the sound swa, exhaling with ha, and letting the mantra swaha with the breath, with the awareness of Kundalini Shakti now as a spring of light inside your Swadhisthana Chakra, the area in the subtle body, inside the central channel, just in the core of the pelvis, swaha. And with the next inhalation, feel that this white gold light, the light of Kundalini, now rises up to the area just behind the navel, in the back of the body, to the area of the Manipura Chakra. And with the inhalation and exhalation, with the sound swaha, you allow your sense of the light energy of Kundalini to expand in this part of your body. Flowing in and flowing out. The breath flowing in to the Manipura Chakra with swa and flowing through it with ha. So that the sound of the mantra and the feeling of the breath expands your sense of This chakra and the presence of Kundalini is a white gold light. And with the next inhalation, the white gold light of Kundalini flows up into the center of the heart, the Anahata chakra, behind the breastbone towards the back. And as you allow the breath to flow in and out of this center with the sound swaha, swa on the inhalation, ha with the exhalation, you feel the center in the heart opening and expanding. And you can, as the breath flows with swaha, you can sense the thread of Kundalini Shakti now flowing from the base up through the central channel as a lightning-like glow of light. So there is a line of energy that connects the base to the heart. And with the next inhalation, the light and the sense of energy rises from the Anahata chakra up to the base of the throat, up to the center known as Vishuddha, the chakra in the throat. And as the breath flows in and out through this center, it flows in with swa, out with ha, and remember, swaha is the mantra of offering. As thoughts are arising, if thoughts are arising, just allow them to join with the mantra and flow out with the exhalation. And remember, wherever the mind goes, all thoughts are made of Shakti. So even though we're doing a very defined and specific practice, it's within the context of recognizing that whatever's going on in your body and mind is also a form of Shakti Kundalini. And with the next inhalation, the Shakti rises up into the center of the head, into the Ajna Chakra, and the breath flows in and out, flowing in with swa, out with ha. And you let your awareness with the Shakti settle into the center. Feeling now that as the breath flows in and Kundalini Shakti nestles there, rests there in the center of the head, that here in the midbrain, Kundalini has taken the form of a white gold flame. And as the breath flows in with swa, as the exhalation arises with ha, you feel that the breath is making an offering to this flame of risen Kundalini in the midbrain. And you feel that your attention is settling more and more deeply into this experience of the inhalation and exhalation of the breath. Of the flame. And as we continue to move through the next part of our time together, see if you can allow your awareness to remain settled for this moment in the midbrain with the flame. And the thought, Swaha. And then feel that, again, with the breath and with the thought, Swaha, the energy and the light of Kundalini flows down with your next inhalation into the heart. And you can listen with your awareness for now, centered in the heart. And if you like, you can open your eyes. I want to say a little bit about some of the elements of the tantric practice that we're covering and discussing in this class on the Vijnana Bhairava. These are intrinsic elements of the Vijnana Bhairava that we return to again and again in different forms. All true tantric practice will combine some of these elements as well as others. And the first is what is sometimes called, which Buddhists call the view, or the basic non-dual understanding that Bhairava gives us in the first few verses and that he keeps coming back to again and again throughout the text. I spoke about it earlier, and I think we're all aware of it. Verse 100 says, consciousness is everywhere. There's no differentiation. Verse 104 says, when you realize that you are in everything, your attachment to the body dissolves and bliss arises. Verse 107 says, feel the consciousness of every being as your own. These, and there are many, many other verses that are intended to help us recognize and remember the view. The word for consciousness that Bhairava uses is, he uses different words for consciousness. One of them is Chinmayi, another is Chaitanya, another is Chetana. And this refers to the fundamental alive intelligence that is the form of life force, and that which is beyond the life force that is the source of everything. And that consciousness, that Chaitanya, that Chetana, that Chinmayi, which there are many, many words for it in Sanskrit and only one in English, which is sometimes confusing because, of course, in Western psychological understanding and also in Buddhist understanding, the word consciousness refers to the capacity for self-knowledge that supposedly only human beings have. In the Tantra, in the Vijnana Bhairava Tantra, the understanding is that this same capacity for sentience is in everything, including in, as the text says, in jars, in rocks, in stones, which is really the radical recognition of non-dual tantra. And it's very counterintuitive. And this is the view. It is all consciousness, that is all sentient, all presence. Of course, the consciousness in a stone is much more asleep than the consciousness in a human being, or the consciousness in a plant, for that matter. And again, we'll come back to this in a few minutes. One of the second important elements in Tantra, and that's very much taken for granted in the Vijnana Bhairava, is sometimes called prana dharana, or dharana means concentration. So prana dharana means concentration of prana. And this doesn't mean just focus. It means that the practitioner, through his or her yogic practice, mainly through breath and concentration practices, such as the practice that we were just doing with Kundalini and the Ajna Chakra, practices such that he or she can focus, or actually let me reframe that, so that the prana shakti, the life force energy, which is normally flowing out through the senses and, kind of scattered, so that this the energy of prana can be focused internally, and it's the pranadharana, the focus of shakti, that actually gives us the energy that is needed for the expansion of consciousness that these dharanas ask us. So one of the things that happens as we practice pranadharana, and that is actually what we've been doing, is we did the Sushumna practice, the Swaha mantra practice, and in the last class, the Madhya practice with the space at the beginning and end of the inhalation and exhalation. What happens through these practices is that we become able to contact what's the subtle prana, the breath within the breath, that is actually the bridge into the inner body. So some of the tantric practices gather prana in order to break through knots. Others direct us to subtle centers where the prana even stops moving. And this space where the prana slows and comes to a stop is actually one of the yogic meanings of the word madhya, which we've referred to again and again, which technically means center, but specifically the inner center that opens as the prana collects and becomes still. Another important element of tantric practice is called laya, which literally means dissolution. And in laya, which is a yoga in itself, it's an aspect of yoga called laya yoga. In laya, we experience the grosser or denser aspects of ourselves dissolving into their subtle essence. So in other words, gross energy, that is dense energy, dissolves into subtler and subtler energy. And this is actually a description of what happens in meditation. When our awareness turns inside, we focus, the prana rises, and then it naturally starts to carry our awareness back through the more outgoing, which is to say denser aspects of mind, into subtler and quieter and deeper aspects of the mind, or, as it's sometimes said, from full awareness of the physical body as a dense and sometimes uncomfortable place that we inhabit, into the more expansive experience of the subtle body, which is both subtler, that is, less tangible than the physical body, and also bigger than the physical body. So literally in laya, the consciousness literally expands. A lot of the subtle experiences that we have in meditation are experiences of prana leading us into laya. So for instance, when we do a mantra like Swaha, a lot of you have shared that there's this very sweet feeling of melting, kind of a melting feeling that happens. And, you know, what is actually happening is that our thoughts are dissolving into the mantra, and the mantra is dissolving into the even subtler consciousness of the inner mind. And so the practice of Swaha, and as is the practice of entering into the Madhya Nadi or Sushumna Nadi, kind of brings about the experience of laya, which is actually another name for deep meditation. And I'm going to, the fourth aspect of tantra that we'll be working with today is atmavidya or atmavichara. Atma, of course, means self. Meaning, in this case, the true self, the essential self, the self that is within which we, through which, as which we realize is identical with the self of the universe, with Shiva's true form of infinite subtlety and spaciousness and all-pervasiveness. So atmavidya means the capacity to discern the Atman, or the true self, from to recognize the true self as free from any of its modifiers, from any object. And we'll be practicing with Atmavidya a little bit later in the evening. But first, I want to practice a form of laya that I have always found completely mysterious, and both because it's both subtle and very, very grounding. And it's the mystical space below the body. And this practice comes from verse 45 and 46, which we practiced with 45 last week when we were doing these meditations on the void below the body, the void in the heart, and the void above. So right now we're going to go a little deeper into what the text describes as the void beneath the body, the void that is the depth of the root chakra. What I have found so amazing about this practice on the center below the root is that it somehow combines the spaciousness of the void with the peacefulness and groundedness of the earth. Somehow this practice takes you into a kind of a deep connection with the earth. Not just the density of the earth, but what we could call the shakti of the earth. So it's actually quite an esoteric piece of tantric wisdom. And as we go into it, before we meditate on it, I want to just say a little bit about this, a point of esoteric tantric geography. And in other words, I want to talk about this concept of the Dwadashanta. Dwada means 12. Dwadashanta means space of 12, and it refers to these literal places in the subtle body, each separated by a space of 12 finger widths or 3 fists. And what these texts tell us, and you can test it for yourself, is that each of the chakras is 12 finger widths or 3 fists for above the one below it and below the one above it. And there are also dwadashantas outside the physical body. Of course, they're not really outside your body because they're in the subtle body, but they are the places, and those of you who've meditated with me for a while know some of these places very well. They are the places where our subtle body can naturally merge into the vastness of consciousness. They're really the prime doorways for opening up ourselves to our greater depth, our greater height, our greater spaciousness. And there, in the texts of Tantra, and in fact in one of the later verses of the Vijnana Bhairava, it's said that these are the real sacred places. You know, the real sacred places are the places where consciousness, individual consciousness, can merge into greater consciousness. So this center is 3 fists below the coccyx. This is the Dwadashanta below the body. And if you feel like it, you can measure it. But what I want to say is that if you're sitting down, which I assume you are, that, of course, your lower body is against the chair. So you have to recognize that, or against the floor, you have to recognize that the Dwadashanta extends through the seat. Remember, we're talking about a subtle center here, and into the floor. So it's the center is about 1 foot beneath your coccyx. And I'm going to ask you to inhale and exhale with the sense that the breath is flowing into this center. And you need to get a little bit disconnected from the literal breath in the nostrils thing here, and just imagine that the breath is flowing in and down through the base of the body into this center, about 1 foot, 3 fists. below the coccyx, below the perineum. This is the lower part of the Muladhara chakra, which, as most of you know, is related to the earth element in the body. And this is the sort of mystical grooviness here. In the Western approach to chakras, which typically derives from Carl Jung and some of the Western alchemical traditions, the root chakra is considered to be related to our survival instinct. In classical tantra, however, it's considered the sexual center. And if we think of the body as having these two poles, the Muladhara and the Sahasrara, we could say that the lower pole is the sexual pole and the upper pole is the spiritual pole. In tantra, we come to realize that actually both of them are seats of spirit, and that's what this practice is about. So in the non-dual tantric traditions, meditation on the center is actually one of the best kept secrets. It's a very mystical practice because the Muladhara chakra is associated with vast aspects of deity and you know, different qualities of Shakti. But for our purposes, for an awakened yogi, the quality of Muladhara that we can tap into in this meditation is called the fourfold blissfulness. The Muladhara is often visualized with four red petals, and each of these petals has a different quality of blissfulness. So again, bring your awareness with the breath, with the inhalation, down towards this open spaciousness about a foot below the base of your body, and see if you can let the breath begin to open it up. Inhaling into the center, feeling it as a space, as a void, as a subtle, blissful seat of consciousness and bliss. Recognizing that here in this center, the void below the body, the Muladhara chakra, there are four kinds of blissful experience that are associated with the enlightened state of being able to walk through the world in open-eyed, fully functioning samadhi. So ordinarily, samadhi is associated with closed-eyed states, obviously. A fully enlightened tantrika experiences samadhi in every single moment of his life. So on the first petal of the Muladhara is Parananda, which means supreme joy. The natural joy you experience when you recognize that nothing inside or outside is not God. We were sitting with my guru, and someone had just given him a rose. He was sitting, tapping the rose against his foot, and this feeling of enormous joy was just flowing through the room. We were all quite ecstatic. And someone asked him what he was experiencing, and he said, "I'm just sitting here feeling the bliss of the rose against the bliss of the foot." So this is Parananda. It's an experience where, again, just let the breath with my words carry you below the coccyx into this space below the body, inhaling into the space, the root, exhaling, feeling this open spaciousness below your body, filling with breath, letting yourself literally sink into this spaciousness. Second type type of bliss in this center is called Sahajananda, literally meaning natural joy. And the Sahaja state is the state where your eyes are open, you're talking to people, but your awareness is completely internally centered. You're experiencing a kind of rolling ecstasy and freedom, which is completely in the body, but completely not identified with the body. And again, as the breath flows into the Sushumna Nadi, in through the Sushumna Nadi and down into the Muladhara Chakra, you can begin to sense that spaciousness. The third form of bliss is called Virananda, which means the ecstasy that arises when you have total control of your passions, which is, of course, one of the requisites of this type of meditation. When your awareness is completely interiorized, you're able to act, to think, to speak to people without letting your attention go outward. In other words, you have supreme control of your mind and your senses. And of course, this is a very advanced state, but we can just contemplate it as we allow our awareness to flow into this space below the body. And the fourth kind of bliss that's centered here is called Yogananda, the bliss of yoga. And this is the natural blissfulness that is experienced when the prana, the vital force, is so perfectly collected and so perfectly present that every pore of your physical and subtle bodies give you the experience of both complete openness and complete containment, interiority. So these are qualities that arise as we fully integrate higher states of consciousness with the body and with the earth. Parananda, supreme joy. Sahajananda, natural joy. Virananda, the joy of self-control, self-discipline, and Yogananda, the bliss of everything having joined together in union, in yoga. So these are signs of what's sometimes called open-eyed enlightenment. Your awareness now centers below the perineum in this open space. This awareness below the body expands with the inhalation and with the exhalation. And you can allow the mantra Swaha to be present there inside this space below the body. The space below the body actually opens you to the fullness of presence within the earth, to the particles of consciousness that exist inside the earth. So inside this voidness, this spaciousness below the body, you're resting deeply inside the earth. And you can begin with the inhalation to draw up the subtle energy from within the earth into your coccyx and perineum and lower body. With the exhalation, you can feel yourself expanding in that space of consciousness beneath. So let the breath continue to flow down, expanding your sense of the void beneath. Drawing up the earth energy that's at the very heart of this Dwadashanta beneath the body. And perhaps you can feel now how, resting on the void beneath you, you're also resting deeply in the earth. You're profoundly grounded as well as open. And from that space, we're going to practice some of the Atmavidya practices of the Vijnana Bhairava. Some of the practices that let us separate our own essential self from the various beliefs and fears and emotions that we normally identify with. But I would also like to ask you right now if anyone has anything you'd like to say or ask about what we just did. That void space is profoundly quiet, but it also, in my experience, kind of shifts your awareness in a what can be a very interesting way. So if you'd like to say anything or ask anything, you can press *7 and you'll be able to talk to us. So if you'd like to say something or ask something, press *7. And if you feel quiet, we'll just breathe together for a minute or two and see if anybody is moved to speak. So, seems like you're not, which is great. So, Atmavidya. Classically, again, in the non-dual tantra, especially the non-dual tantra, the non-dual Shaiva tantra, which this text is very related to, there are actually two stages of the practice. The first stage in Sanskrit is called neti neti, which means not this, not this. And in this practice, you ask yourself, okay, what am I not? In other words, you start to detach yourself from the objects of pure awareness. So you might start by realizing that, you know, it's sort of obvious that you're not the same five-year-old who thought his parents were God. You know, you're now a 40-year-old, and your body's different, your thoughts are different. So you're not that five-year-old, even though he has your name. You're not the role that you had in your family when you were a child, and you're not even the role that you have in your family now. You're not your feelings of tiredness. You're not your emotional neediness. You're not the sadness or the fear that arises sometimes. That there is something within you which is present to all this, but which is not affected by it. And that something, that suchness, is what we call the Atma. So in classical Atma Vidya or Atma Vichara practice, we discover our identity with this non-dual, non-physical awareness. And we're going to do that in a moment. But the second stage is what is called in Sanskrit iti iti, that is all this, or this, this. Niti means not this, iti means this. So once we've discovered that we are not bound by the body or our roles or our thoughts or anything else, as we go deeper into that recognition, we realize that this infinitely subtle awareness is actually inside our bodies, inside our thoughts, inside everything in the universe. So it's this tremendous paradox. We first have to recognize that we are not what we think we are. And from there, we can begin to realize that what we really are is an awareness that is not different from the divine awareness. So we're going to do a Vijnana Bhairava version of classical non-dual self-inquiry practice. There are a couple of these kinds of practices. One of these is contained in verse 124, which we talked about in week one. You know, and this is when you ask yourself, what am I not, or what am I really? What you find is that the verbal answers start to fall away, and you start to recognize something that's not, it is wordless, but is still contains a sense of being, a sense of self, a sense of existence. Verse 124 says, the reality of Bhairava exists in everybody, even in the ignorant, because everybody knows they exist, and that sense of existence is Bhairava. So one of the most interesting ways to start to tune in to that which is present when you let go of your ordinary ways of identifying yourself is described in verse 94. And the verse says, imagine that your mind, intellect, and ego do not exist. Then, because there is nothing to cause thoughts, you'll be free of thoughts, and the awareness that is Bhairava will arise. So, again, your eyes are closed. Be comfortable in your posture. Turn your attention inside and just consider, my mind is not there. When I look inside, the mind doesn't exist, the ego doesn't exist. There are no memories, no ideas, no perceptions, no emotions. So what are you when there's no thought, no memory, no perception, no feeling of being a particular person? What is there? If you can tune into that which remains. If you're not thinking, there are no memories, no perceptions. What are you? Remember, you're not looking for a verbal answer here. You're using the question to kindle a sense of being present to a suchness that's without thoughts, that's without egoity, without the feeling of being Robert or Tulsi. Without thoughts, without emotions, without ideas, without perception, without identification of yourself as this or that. What are you? What's there? So the breath is flowing in and flowing out. Turn your mind, turn your consciousness onto itself, what you call mind is the collection of thoughts, emotions, the tendency to identify yourself as one thing or another. So turn your awareness back onto itself. Without thoughts, without emotions, without memories, without perceptions. Now, in this moment, we're going to enter into the process of iti iti. And again, we're doing these as speed meditations there for you to explore. And the verse, there are many, many verses which point to this. Once you've begun to recognize this suchness, this awareness, this awaring, it's present when there are no thoughts or memories or ideas, then perhaps you can begin to recognize that that awareness, that consciousness, actually pervades first your body and then the world itself. So we'll start by putting attention into the midbrain. We're just going to locate ourselves in the midbrain, the very center of the head, which is the place that we normally consider the center of awareness, of consciousness. And now feel that your entire head and your entire body is filled with awareness. That subtle knowing suchness. That aliveness and presence fills your entire body. There's no physical body. There's just awareness. There is just this scintillating ground of alive intelligence. It's present in your toes, all the way through your body, through up into the head. What you think of as your physical body is actually consciousness. Alive, vibrating intelligence. Now expand this consciousness. Recognize that the same consciousness, the same intelligence, is inside everybody within the sound of my voice. So everyone on this call, everyone who's hearing today and in the future, is actually filled with and made of this same consciousness that even though it takes so many shapes and forms, is in no way different than the aware, alive presence that fills your body. And begin to recognize that every living being whom you can imagine or think of, and even those whom you can't imagine or think of, that all of these beings are filled with the same awareness. The same awareness is in all bodies as in yours. And by bodies, we mean the bodies of animals and insects, bodies of trees and plants, the body of the earth. So consider everywhere your attention can go. This one consciousness pervades the people at your work, the people walking down the street in your town. The birds and squirrels, the farm animals, people who are imprisoned, very sick, dancing somewhere, falling in love. What happens when you consider that the same consciousness is in all these bodies as in yours? And just see if you can rest in the space that arises in this realization. Breath is flowing in and out, of course. If you start to space out, you can return to the thought of the breath flowing in and down the Sushumna Nadi. Same consciousness is in all bodies as in mine. And the text says, if you can keep returning to that awareness, you will be all-pervading within days. So let your attention now flow in and down through the central channel down towards the base with Swaha and up through the central channel towards the crown with Swaha. Consider now the people that you know, the ones that you like and the ones that you don't feel close to. And I know that there's some of you who don't dislike anybody. But maybe there are people in the world that you feel distant from or that you don't really want to have to think about or who have done things that you don't think are good or that you feel are very ignorant. So just let yourself think of whoever arises in your mind and just feel the same consciousness as in that person as in myself. The people who've loved you, the people who've not been so nice to you. The people that you've fallen in love with who haven't been in love with you. People who've loved you that you haven't been able to love. Same consciousness is in all of you. And that, of course, includes people who are suffering. And because this practice can make you so radically empathetic and open, I want to say that the more you settle into this recognition, that which unites us is the alive love intelligence, the subtle awareness. It's deeper than thoughts and emotions and certainly deeper than physical bodies. And the deeper you come into that awareness, the more you recognize that consciousness is free. It may be inside a body that's feeling pain, And when you really open your consciousness to recognizing that there's not a difference between the consciousness in another and in you, when you open yourself to that, you do become able to sense another's pain and even feel it yourself. But the deeper truth is that that consciousness which connects us is free of pain. It's both inside our physicality and it's completely free of our physicality. It's both inside emotion and free of emotion. So as you breathe in and breathe out with the thought swaha, with the recognition that there's one consciousness in everything, with that awareness, feel that your inhalation draws you and everyone that you have brought into your awareness, draws them in and offers them into that utterly free awareness that is not yours or mine, that takes shape as all beings and yet is beyond them, which is the source of life and the source of blessing. So feel that your inhalation draws all those beings whom you can imagine into that pure awareness, and then with your exhalation, that pure awareness whose essence is love flows back into the world, filling your body and the bodies of everyone that you know or can think of with the transmission of blessing that can only come from the heart of consciousness. Let your breath draw duality into that awareness that transcends and includes everything. And let your exhalation bring forth the blessings of that awareness into the world. And as we draw this third session of the Vijnana Bhairava to a close, and as we sit for a while and listen to the mantras of the goddess that will begin to come through the phone in a few minutes, consider how this practice, how making a commitment to holding this awareness as a practice can change the way you interact both with yourself and with others. The ways in which this recognition is transformative are as unique as every one of us. It can open our heart. It can bring forth our capacity to touch into higher intelligence. It can begin to answer our questions. It can strengthen us. And above all, it can begin to heal the fear and the wounding that we've carried for so long because of our feeling of separateness and our identification with our separate individual self. And this is not about letting go of that individual self. It's about learning how the recognition that the same consciousness is in you as in all beings, how that recognition can bring you in touch with the source of what I can only call divine power. And you can begin to recognize how that divine power is expressing itself in you, as you, through you, and giving grace to every person and animal and object that comes into your life. Because the gift of awakening to this recognition in yourself is that it begins to be available to others, not because you necessarily tell them about it, but because in that act of recognizing yourself as pure awareness and the people around you as that as well, everything shifts. So I just want to thank you so much for your presence and commitment in this time we've had together, and to remind you that there's another week of practice, and you'll be getting a homework assignment, and the listserv will remain open, the conversation will remain. I'm hoping that you'll share these experiences, the ways in which this practice has impacted you, and any questions you have about it. At the very end of the Vijnana Bhairava, the Devi asks Bhairava, she says, well, if we really do recognize that everything is one consciousness, that everything is you, then who's going to do practices? Who's going to worship? Who's going to do all the great holy acts that help keep the world together? And he says in this very beautiful way that having this recognition of the truth of awareness and love as the heart of ourselves and everything encompasses all practices. And it doesn't mean, and I say this from my own years of experience, holding the practice of non-dual awareness while doing lots of practices, it doesn't mean that you don't continue to meditate and chant and let your awareness move through the sushumna nadi and enjoy the blissfulness of repeating a mantra or practicing an asana, not to mention all the things you do in the world for yourself and other people. It just means that you do them with the intention to recognize the deep truth that everything you say and do is being said and done by that supreme awareness that acts through your body and mind, and whose entire purpose is for you and I and all of us to recognize what we are and what he is, what she is. And through that recognition, allow this world to become really the blissful expression of that divine awareness, which is what it's practicing to be. So, with great love and great gratitude, we'll say goodnight, and I'll continue this same core meditation practice this week, and you'll receive some instructions and an audio for practicing these luscious dharanas, the ones that we were doing this week. And you can just let yourself sit as long as you're comfortable as we listen to the words of the prayer that invokes the presence of Shakti in everything.
Namaste. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key.
Namaste. Namah.